July 18, 2020, it's the Juan Frapino Show. Watt for Pedro show. Happy Saturday. It's still quick in quarantine mode, so Brother Matt down with Love Grotto, Pleasure Point. Although I am not man alone, because the wonders of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got Dan and Harden from Speed Dealer.
Hello.
Where are you calling? From Lubbock?
No, we're in Dallas.
Dallas, okay. But maybe the band started in Lubbock?
Yeah, originally, a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember when you guys, I've been around a little bit, and I remember when you guys came out, and I thought it was Lubbock. Because I've played that town a few times. Actually, there's other rock and rollers from there, Waylon and Buddy Holly.
Yeah, that's true, that's true. Speed Dealer was not based in Lubbock for very long at all.
Okay, yeah, it's a trippy. It's actually, they got an interstate coming from Amarillo, so it ain't hard to get to. But if you're going across, it kind of is. So who wants to go first? Because, oh, I got to have people with music. We heard the Inchworm, John Coltrane. After that, Speed Dealer with All the Things That You'll Never Be. That's right. When I first heard of you guys, you were REO Speed Dealer.
Yeah, we were.
Or Speedwagon. Yeah, no, the real band's REO Speed. I got a funny story about that. Minutemen was playing in, they're from Champaign, Illinois, you know? And we were playing there at a pad called Mabel's, and like their, you know, the roadie that doesn't lift shit. He came to the gig, and it was snowing outside, and this motherfucker was sweating. So, you know, it was up there. So, but who wants to go first? Because I want to talk about you guys as like music journeys, how you got on what you do.
Doesn't matter to me.
Doesn't matter to me either.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead, man. Go ahead, Harden.
Okay.
We'll go reverse alphabetical. You know, a W guy. I'm into that. So, Harden, your earliest musical recollection, please.
Earliest musical recollection?
Yeah, memory brand on your brain, you know.
Just like listening to a little AM radio I had and keep it under my pillow and it turned on all night.
Okay, where was this?
That was in Kansas City where I was born. Okay. Kansas City, Missouri.
Right. The big one. What about the pad? Was there instruments?
Yeah, my mom started me out on drums when I was in like third grade.
Wow.
She was an advocate to have her children learn a musical instrument, and she, for some reason, she thought I was tone deaf, which I'm not, but I guess back then I seemed like I was, so she put me on the drums and pretty much forced me to practice every day before I could go out and have fun, which was a chore to me, but eventually it turned around. I turned the tables on her, where she couldn't get me to stop.
Yeah, she got you like a whole track kit and shit?
Yeah, it was a small little Ludwig Blue Sparkle, like a just a four-piece track kit, yeah.
And where'd you prac? A bedroom or garage?
Yeah, my bedroom.
Okay. And like to records? That's how George Hurley learned.
Yeah, to records a lot.
Yeah.
And also some lessons.
In fact, you know, the two records he learned from was Who? Happy Jack, and Billy Cobham, Spectrum.
Weirdest. Wow.
Yeah. So, what was the first record you bought yourself?
I think the first record I purchased with my own money was News of the World, Queen record.
Oh, Queen. Okay.
Yeah.
I saw them. It was called Sheer Heart Attack when they were touring.
Yeah.
With Mata Hoople.
I had records before.
They're pretty good. They're pretty good. They got they're kind of more rock and roll. This was before the Bohemia thing. Okay, third grade, she gets you. So in school, did you do drums? Did you do the marching band? Did you do choir or shit like that?
I did the school band, which was okay, but it was just one drum, of course.
Right.
You know? And then when they started marching band, I went for a few days, and it was like practice marching in the sun after school in Texas, and without an instrument, just practice marching. I'm like,
yeah.
Man, this isn't playing. This is military bullshit. So I didn't go for the marching band time. I enjoy watching them. But
there is a trip about marching band connected to the trap kit. Almost all rock and rollers do match grip, but the old way was because of that, right? Because of the sideways trip?
Yeah. So, yeah, I enjoy watching marching bands, and I appreciate it, but it just wasn't my
But what do you play match grip, or do you do that traditional?
I play match grip. Yeah, yeah. I first learned traditional, but I started getting, I don't know, I just switched somewhere along the line.
Yeah, the dude in the blasters, Bill Bateman, he does traditional, but he flipped one of them. He flips the tip over so that it got like the, you know, the handle.
The butt end?
Yeah, butt end. Sorry about that. It's trippy. He's a great guy. He's also a carpenter. He makes his own fucking drums.
Bet you.
So what about the shit? Oh, well, I got to ask you, what was the first gig you went and saw?
First gig I went and saw was, I think it was Kiss.
Oh, yeah. We saw them a few times before they had an album out. And then I remember the album came out, we said, damn, is that slow. Because they would open up for anybody, man. Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Savoy Brown, Wishbone Ash. Oh, yeah, yeah. This would be like early 70s, you know.
Yeah, this was like mid-70s. It was quite a fucking spectacle when, I mean, it was fire and sparks.
They had the fire.
Acid, blood, and everything.
The bass man did the on Firehouse, in fact, the song.
Yeah.
And then Paul Stanley was wearing a little fucking fire hat and shit. One time his hair caught fire, Gene Simmons, and a dude had to, roadie knocked it out with a wet towel. We were on the side, and we could see it from where we, you know, shitty seats, Long Beach Arena.
That's it. Yeah, I hope he got a raise.
But the sign was different. The sign was only like 40 light bulbs, because it was Morricano. They were just starting, you know. We only saw him once with the album, and by this time they had the lunch pails and the, what is it called, Destroyer.
Yeah.
And then it was massive. But at first they were just opening that, you know. But they were a little different. They were a little different. And if you're just learning out, you could play off their records really quick. A lot of Chuck Berry chords. And, so
it's pretty simple rock and roll.
Yeah.
Learn to when you're a young drummer.
Actually, it was like New York Dolls with the Halloween makeup instead of girls' makeup.
Pretty much.
And nothing wrong with New York Doll. Johnny Thunders, Jerry Nolan, great cats. Dearly missed. So what about the shit after school where, you know, the garage band, the basement band? Did you do that with some buddies?
Yeah. I would get together with friends. A guy named Casey Orr, a friend of mine. We'd get together and various guitarists and just in his mom's garage, we'd just try to learn rock and roll songs, you know.
Okay, yeah, I'm curious. So you weren't writing. You were like me and D. Boone. You're learning off records, right?
Yeah, at that point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And what about, did you ever do any gigs with this band?
No. That was just kids in a garage. We were barely 13, probably 7th grade.
Yeah, junior high. So, did you record yourself?
No, there's no recordings.
We didn't either. Thank God. Shit, we didn't know you were...
Mine has some...
We didn't know we didn't know you were supposed to tune with each other. We thought if you played down on the corner, it sounded right, you were in tune.
Must have sounded like, that's not my problem.
Drummies... Yeah, your notes last a lot shorter. But there is a thing to tune in drums. On my first opera with Stephen Hodges, me and him went by every tune and tuned them up to the key of the song. It makes shit more tight. It is a hassle, though.
Yeah, to the tune of the song is way more specific than most people get, but definitely tuning a drum has to be done.
Well, you know where you can see it real accurate? Well... Okay, there's two things. You don't want to have the fucking woo, the rings, right? But the other thing, like, if you ever used electronic with the MIDI shit, it'll do it, you know, with the twist of a knob. And Georgie got into these Roland drums, and it was a trip that way. But, yeah, he told me it was like playing a fucking tabletop. You know, I want to play Choke, okay?
lost a son there. 10-1 Viet Cong American kill ratios and jingoistic songs used to sell a senseless war. Numbers dead, boarded, without distinguishing civilians from troops. There's an absolute toll only a nebulous god knows. He understands. Trying to stay alive in rice paddies, booby-trapped bridges. Just ask Uncle Ted, shot in the head, yet survived, but better than dead, finally home in Toledo. Told me his boots rotted off, fed cigarettes by the carton, slept standing up, if at all. Live coals for eyes. Whir of the local life flight, and he becomes the bushes, invader in the old cul-de-sac, ashamed, leaps to his feet, across the street, neighbor knowingly nodding. Imagined.
Can you hear me? 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 Thank you. Seven other people in a row with aromatics in a bed of dough.
El
Bob for Pedro show. Yeah, that was Choke from Speed Dealer. And then Dan McGuire with Real or Imagine, Toledo. Wild Rats. Yeah, yesterday was Ron Ashton's birthday. So this comes from sessions we did for this movie, Me, Him, and Thirst, Steve Shelley, Don Fleming. It was called Velvet Goldmine. It's a trippy movie. But, fuck, first time I got to record with Ron Ashton. And mind-blowing. So that was called Gas Up. Robert Reynolds. Yeah, I found these records that I got in the late 70s. Robert Reynolds and Thomas Lear. And it had a big effect on me. You know, these records from England, when the punk movement started, and you get these you never see the fucking bands, but there would be some trippy shit on records. So Paralysis from Robert Reynolds, and then Private Plane from Thomas Lear. A few after that, Japan with Tales Songs. Dance, Maya, City, Tea, and Chocolate. Brand new from Wireline, Seven Birds. Guy by voice. Three albums already this fucking year. God, he goes to town, man. Bob Paul. Yeah, and one of them is a double album.
You
know,
damn.
I mean, yeah, I think he's up to 110 now or some shit. It's incredible, this cat. They were here on New Year's and played a 100-song set. I think it was 5 hours.
Oh, my God.
Just a memory. Okay, Deer Hoof and Wada, Leo Smith, doing breakup songs. And finally, Losing My Shit. Love this song, Speed Dealer. Now it's your turn, Dan. Your earliest musical recollection, please.
My earliest is my mom and dad. They had a... you know, 8-track and a vinyl console that they got on layaway at one of those rent center type places. And they had a whole bunch of Boston, Elton John, stuff like that in the 70s. And they had Bruce Springsteen. That was, for me, what changed, I guess, my whole music attitude or how I looked at music.
And where was
my
this?
Earliest recollection.
Where was this?
This was in the 70s.
No, where?
In Dallas.
Okay, Dallas.
I was born and raised in Dallas, Texas.
You know what rhythm section comes out of Dallas is the ZZ Top guys, Dusty Rhodes and...
Right.
Frank Beard. Frank Beard. No, Billy's Houston. The other
Yeah, Billy's cats. Houston, that's yeah. Right. Stevie Ray Vaughan, it's where in Oak Cliff, that's where I grew up.
Okay. So, and also right next door, Fort Worth was... Ornette Coleman, Caravan of Dreams. See, people don't know shit like this, and they get inaccurate, cliche stereotype.
Right.
What about your pad? Was there instruments?
Yeah, I played tuba.
In
the band.
Oh, you mean at school?
I didn't have the right lips for a trumpet. I wanted to play trumpet or saxophone, so I got the tuba. Because I had the lips for a tuba, and I was the best tuba player just south of the Trinity River.
You know, I heard like tuba and bone was good for...
And also the only one.
All right, the only one.
But they were good for marching band because the big mouthpiece, like the trumpet and shit, French horn I heard was the hardest. The little fucking thing kept bouncing while you're sweating to death in the wool suit.
Right. Everyone got the cool instruments. I got the tuba. Yeah, no one wanted the tuba.
Well, was it really the tuba or was it a sousaphone?
It's a sousaphone.
Yeah, the wraparound, right?
Yeah. I'm not the sousaphone. Just a regular tuba that's okay. Set in your lap. The one they used in the marching band. I wasn't in the marching band. I was just in regular band.
Oh, okay. So it's like a big baritone horn.
Right.
You sit. You sit and play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct.
But I was wondering in your pad, like, did it, your parents or did you have siblings that played guitar or the piano or some shit like that?
Yeah, everyone played an instrument in my house. There were flutes, there were other things. My dad was in a band. He was a keyboardist in a band called the Dallas Highlight.
That's great.
And he did gigs. They were pretty much cover bands. Chicago, we, you know, grew up with a bunch of Chicago. And, you know, his band, basically, they covered a bunch of Chicago and different stuff like that, and dance halls and stuff like that.
Chicago, you know, they were called CTA at first.
Right.
Chicago Transit Authority or some shit.
Yeah, right.
Because they came and they almost became like the house band at the Whiskey, them and the Doors. I was just a boy, but
yeah.
It was a while ago. So How did you get on what you got on? What was the move from the tuba? What made that happen?
You know, the tuba wasn't cool, and I wasn't getting any girls with the tuba. So, you know, eventually, the first record I bought was, and this is kind of funny, I guess, was Shout at the Devil.
Oh.
A friend of mine had it in the neighborhood. He had like a pool table on his garage, and I'd never heard music like that, you know. And, you know, I just thought it was the greatest thing. And so that was the first vinyl record I actually bought.
What about your first gig?
My first gig that I went and saw was in September of 1985. I went and saw Bruce Springsteen at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas for the first time. First of 26 times that I've seen him live.
Whoa!
And that was hidden for a long time. I wouldn't say that openly because I was supposed to be metal and cool and all that stuff. But it's been a love relationship for me with Springsteen and going around the country and seeing him in different places. And last time I saw him was in Broadway. That was the last time I got to see him.
In New York City.
Yeah.
What was the first guitar you got?
It was a Squire. Of course, I was trying to get the Telly.
Or
the blonde Telly.
Actually, it was an Esquire, huh?
Yeah, his was an Esquire, but kind of a Frankenstein Esquire.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got the Squire, you know, the white Japanese Squire.
Sure.
I bought it at Eugene's Guitars in Crocker Hill. And I used to go in there every Friday with my money and put my money down to pay, you know, for the guitar and layaway plan and whatnot.
Yeah.
And every Friday when I'd go in there, there was this guy. He wore all this flamboyant, you know, clothes, and everyone in the whole place was wrapped around this guy. And I'd have to wait till they got done talking to this guy until Eugene would come over there and take my money from me, $10 or whatever it was.
Yep.
And so years passed by after I paid it off. I didn't realize who that was. And so anyway, long story short, fast forward, I got to meet Eugene years later. I said, man, I know you probably don't remember me, but I bought this guitar for me. Y'all would talk to this guy. Was that Stevie Ray Vaughan? He said, yeah, that was Stevie. You didn't know that all that time? And I was like, no, I didn't know that. And so, you know, we kind of joke in Dallas that everyone's got a Stevie Ray Vaughan story. I actually have a Stevie Ray Vaughan story.
Yeah, and you know what? He did dress up.
Yeah, he did.
But, you know, he could play. Learned a little bit from Jimmy, but that's okay.
Yeah, I was never really much of a fan, but...
everybody learned from Jimmy.
Yeah. I mean, I was a fan of Jimmy's, of course.
I think Billy... Before ZZ had Moving Sidewalks, he got to open up for Jimmy, and they got to be friends or some shit, I think I've read somewhere.
Yeah, I read that too.
Okay, we're at the end of the first hour, July 18, 2020 edition, Watt Pedro Show, special guest speed dealer. Hold tight for hour two. July 18, 2020, it's the second hour, Watt from Pedro Show.
Now, It's my The D string for the drum and the G string for gasoline.
Someone who died.
Watt for Beagle. She'll start off the second hour with On My Way, Speed Dealer. And Damon Smith with Limitless Autumn. A little solo stand-up bass there. Not tuba, but we'll learn him. Thorn Friends from Austin with Standing Rock. Thorn's a great drummer, man. He played a bunch of years with Swans. Magnet Hearts, Shaolin Hall here with his new album, Misty Dawn. Chris Burns out of Canada with Is It a Rut or Is It a Groove? Lewis Cole, What Will Be? Shell Shag, they were on the last show with Trigger. Golden from Tokyo with Dead Guitar Strings. The demo. I couldn't believe it. Whatever. And then from France, Paper Tea, Paper Tiger, and our thing. Papier Teague, yeah, Watt sounds like an idiot saying that. Huh? I'm someone who dies, and then finally, we are diseased. Speed Dealer. So, Dan Harden, both you guys, let me know how the band got together. Please.
Well, the band formed in Lubbock. Dan and I were not in the band when it first formed. And they put out this Brown record once they moved to Dallas. And then the members couldn't really get along. So the singer and Jeff, who writes all the music and sings, called me and Eric to see if we wanted to join up. That was back in like 96. So, and then we did that and we...
Now, did you and Dan play together in another unit before this?
No, Dan was in a different band at this time.
I was in a band called the Swingin' Dicks around those days.
Oh, I remember those cats. All right.
Yeah, so, sweet.
So, actually, Harden joins the band before you.
Yeah, he was in Rigor Mortis.
Okay.
Harden was in Rigor Mortis with Casey Orr.
Oh, that guy you played with when you were young.
Yeah, that's right. We formed Rigor Mortis with Mike Scotcher.
You know, I had to do community service at the morgue here in downtown L.A. And have you ever seen dudes with rigor mortis? I mean, we had to, like, break their arms and legs and tie them with ropes. And also, tattoos don't look too good, especially if it's hot weekend. The dudes permanently worked there eating lunch and shit. I never breathed through my nose once when I did that. It was, Jesus. But rigor mortis is a trip. I mean, it is. And stacking people like, you know, firewood and shit. But they don't stack good because the arms and the legs are all frozen out. So you got to, and I had to wash the trays and the rags. It was, no more. I didn't drink and drive again after that for fucking sure.
No shit.
But anyway, back to you. So, Harden, you're in the band. And then you guys, what, a dude leaves and Dan's got to come in and take the place?
Yeah. After we were, we'd been a band a while. We put out like 4 records and we were touring extensively, probably over 300 shows a year for a few years there.
Whew.
Yeah, it was brutal, but it was fun. We went all over the place. And then... I guess everybody kind of got burned out, so we sort of went on a hiatus. And then when we decided to reform, not really decided to reform, but just kind of got back together to play a friend of ours' party at a bar. And Dan stepped in to do some of the singing, and then we decided we wanted to continue on again. But the guy who was the singer, he didn't want to do it anymore, so... Dan took over.
Okay. So he quit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you could say Dan took over, but in another way, that guy, he's over the ropes out of the ring.
Yeah.
Right. I want to play...
He's a friend of ours, and he still contributes to the writing when we do make records, but he doesn't want to do any kind of live shows or touring or... singing a band anymore. He's actually a college professor now and trying to separate those two lives, I guess.
Yeah. Well, the Beach Boys with Brian Wilson was kind of like that, right?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. So I want to play Rheumatism here.
Flying is about the same thing, I guess. It was written by Van Morrison, but I take a lot of liberty with it. As Lucky Strikes do a lot for your guitar playing, but not your voice. Slim, slow slider, a horse she rides is white as snow. Slim, slow slider, a horse she rides just as white as snow. Everywhere you go. Saw you walking way down on Market Street this morning, babe. Saw you on a corner, Market Street and Exchange Street this morning. Change comes across your face like a storm that's brewing. You were walking lightly down the street. Oh, staring down at your feet. I caught you this morning with your brand new boy and his Harley Davidson bike. You this morning, baby, with your brand new boy and his Harley Davidson bike. Ain't nothing like losing. Ain't nothing like losing what you really, 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 really like. We used to walk together way down by the factory yard. We used to walk together way down by the factory yard. The night watchman so sleepy. They were busy playing cards. Jack of diamonds, ace of spades. Oh, I dealt you a bad hand. I did not, baby. Jack of diamonds. I must have dealt you a bad hand. Somewhere I looked at myself and I couldn't understand. It was in the cards, baby. said nothing. Oh, but Deborah said to let you go. Looked up in the sky and the moon had said nothing. Oh, but Deborah said to let you go. Yes, she did, yes, she did, yes, she did. And I never encountered too much. She didn't know by instinct, baby. New boy in your Cadillac. She was right. So I saw you next with your brand new boy in his Cadillac Eldorado.
Stop!
Wop Pedro Show as Rheumatism Speed Dealer. Blue Coop is a band with two of the Blue Oyster Cult guys, the brothers, Albert and Joe Bouchard, bass and drum, and then the bass man from Alice Cooper, Dennis Dunaway. So Joe Bouchard switched over the guitar. And they got this, yeah, get it, like Blue Oyster Cult and Alice Cooper, so Blue Coop. Anyway, we saw, now, I can't match you, Dan, with the 26 times, but we saw BOC maybe 8 times when we were, yeah. First gig me and D. Boone saw was T-Rex. That was our first concert. It was T-Rex. Yeah, we were 14.
That was pretty great, huh?
It was good. It was trippy. It was different than the records. He'd play a couple minutes of the tune like off the record and then get on his knees and do about 15 minutes of guitar solo. He was into Jimmy. It was a trip, though, yeah. He's my first rock and roll hero. I had a, they didn't have merchandise, but some bootleg guys a block away would be selling, Xerox, little 3-foot poster, and I had that's on my bulkhead. And so he's my first rock star guy. Chicos Raros, after that with El Bar from Barcelona, Peter Lochner out of the old Cleveland scene with Slim Slow Slider, New Hard Folk, American Spirit, and finally Second Sight, Speed Dealer. So, what was it like? I mean, Dan, did you know about Speed Dealer before you joined them?
Yeah, I was a huge fan.
Oh, okay.
To me, they, you know, I saw them back in the day, you know, and my band, we had a lot of stick, you know, early on in 95, you know. A lot of, the New York Dolls type stuff like that.
Yeah.
Angry Simones, I loved them.
Oh, yeah.
That was the thing for me, you know.
Did
you
ever get to see them live?
I toured with them several times.
Was it the Metal Mike one, though?
Yeah, it was Metal Mike.
Nowadays he calls it, like, one time you had a version that was all girls except him. Now I think he just calls it Angry Samoan, because Greg Turner, he's a professor now, and he's like, man, you got to stop using that name. I'm not in the band, you know.
Well, Mike's not in that one. That's just Bill, the drummer.
That's right. That's Bill.
Yeah. They're all real good guys, man. All those.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Metal Mike is a trip. I spent a lot of time with that guy.
He's an accountant at a hospital, right?
Yeah, he's retired now. But I spent a lot of time on the road with him and the other guys, and man, for years they would Metal Mike. He would send my kids gifts every Christmas and on their birthdays.
Oh, beautiful.
I've got all, like, first pressing unwrapped Metal Mike and Angry Simone's albums, you know, this first, you know, just the original stuff that I've never even opened yet.
I
have recordings of all of them.
There's a real good record, Left Side of My Brain or something.
Oh, yeah.
Or My Mind. That's such a good sound, man. I remember us and the Black Flag guys listening to that right when it came out. And, man, but no, they used to be a 3-guitar band. Like Black
Hawk. Yeah,
they had 3 guitars. Great. They had some funny ass shit, like they saved Hitler's cock and, you know, my old man's a fatso and shit.
Yeah, fat from Samoa. Yeah,
but he also wrote for Cream Magazine and friend of Richard Meltzer.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He was the one that they dubbed or got the credit, or maybe I'm reading it wrong, but he was one of the first ones that used the word heavy metal. He wrote an article on Black Sabbath, and he referred to it as heavy metal.
It's in that song, Born to Be Wild.
Yeah. I mean, but he was like, right, it had been around. But what I'm saying is, when he was, that's why he's called Metal Mike, is, he used that term in an article describing their album, one of their albums, and when he wrote for Cream.
Yeah, because, you know, you might be totally right, Dan, because before that we would call it hard rock. Nobody said metal. They said hard rock. Acid rock, raga rock, heavy rock. But I remember hard rock was the most common word when we were teenagers. And then that word metal came. And I know it was in that, because that song is in Easy Rider. Right. Well, we're at the end of the second hour. July 18, 2020, Dishwap Pedo Shoe special guest, B-Dealer. Hold tight for hour three. July 18, 2020, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show. We'll be right back. Beaver Show, start our third hour with the feed dealer doing Never Knew. Now there's no K in that new.
Right.
Always old. Get a little algebra. Okay. Then Crane with Reminiscent, Tragicomic Jam number 8. Yeah, not to be confused with Jam number 7. Yeah. And David Gerard with Echoes, Tonalities, finally Speed Dealer, Hit and Run. Hit It and Run. There's a great funkadelic song off of Maggot Brain called Hit It and Quit. So I was thinking of that, you know. Yeah, Hit It and Quit. So reviving back the band. I mean,
yeah.
I've been in experience. You know, I replaced the dead guy, right? And you do the old songs. And I did 125 Months with Stooges, Jay Maskus in the Fog.
Right.
I guess I replaced him because he plays everything on the record. And Porno for Pyros, our time was a little sick, so I helped him out. So I've done that a few times. But with you guys, it seems like more like you became the band, right? You're not just some side mouse like me.
That's the band now.
Yeah, it is the band. What we're doing now, I mean, it's I tried being Jeff, you know, in the beginning. Yeah. I sound similar to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he sat me down and he like, hey, man, you got to be yourself, you know, and, you know, find your own voice in the band. And so, you know, I've been in the band, so I guess it's 2016 and been touring with these guys and they're all good guys, you know. I was in the Swinging Dicks on tour with the Dictators when I got the call.
Uh-huh.
And that was running its course. But it was funny because I met Daniel Ray through that way, and Daniel Ray produced his new album.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he did a lot of Speed Dealer albums, a few of them.
So, like Bon Scott in Brian...
right? Johnson.
Yeah, right. He had a... I guess he's back in. He got his hearing back or something. But
yeah, I heard that.
In a way, he had... I think it would... I get what Jeff means. He had... He didn't want a replacement. The guy had to find... He wanted you to find your own voice. Literally.
Right.
But that makes some sense, right?
Totally. Yeah, it does. It's it relieved a lot of pressure off me because you know, the band to me was, you know, Jeff and Eric and Harden and the members before. You know, I saw so many shows and I was, you know, such a fan of their early stuff and coming up, you know, when we would play shows, they would put us on the bill opening up. And, so it was big, you know, big shoes to fill for me. But when I was able just to be myself and find my own voice, you know, it became a lot easier, you know.
Oh, this might be old news, but when did the name change?
Speed Dealer, after the cease and desist letter.
Okay. I thought there was something like that.
Yeah, it was 97 when, I believe, when they had to drop the REO. And so when Harden and Eric joined, they were Speed Dealer, just Speed Dealer.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, all the way up until here, we still get called that. I mean, we're not calling ourselves that.
Yeah.
But we actually got into it with some of the past members because they thought we were using the REO name because someone, like, made a poster up and they wanted us to call the promoter and tell them to take the poster down and all this stuff, and it caused all this drama.
Yeah, drama.
And everyone was chiming in on social media. But I made peace with the members and did the right thing and or tried to do the right thing, and just you know, if I see that thing, you know, we're not, that's not us.
Sure.
We're not that band. But they actually got a deal. They're going to be on the new Tony Hawk re-released, revised or whatever Tony Hawk game, because they were on the original one.
Yeah.
So Mike and Rodney are going to get that deal, you know, and Jeff from the Brown record.
Okay. You know, I'd do this with, hey, why are you playing with Iggy Pop? No, man, that's Stooges. I think it's important in a way because a band it's got a thing, you know, it's a life. So maybe not such a little trivial thing. I want to play Cream number one here. I love this tune.
Yeah. Judy said, I think we're a little stuck. I don't know what's wrong with us, but I'm so bored, and I can't say I blame her, 'cause we do the same things every day. Judy said, these subways are all fucked up. Why do we put up with it? Then we all showed up, then we just barely made it. And the same thing happens every day, 'cause everything is almost broken here, where we're holes in the bag, while the money men are riding the machines. Judy says, let's get on.
Bought for Pedro Show Last Music of this edition. Cream number one from Speed Dealer. Then Base Stations from James Rock. Heaven Channel Season LP7. Season 1 LP7. Galaxy. These cats live in the desert here in Joshua Tree. And during this quick quarantino, 8 albums! So anybody there saying they're bored or shit, just call up the Galaxy people. Okay, they'll jam your fucking brains out. And finally, Blue Days, Black Knights, Speed Dealer. What's the next plans?
Next plans?
Yeah.
Well, we had a bunch of touring scheduled for this year.
Postpone.
So we'll probably pick up on a lot of that, hopefully, if things let up. Towards the beginning of next year, we had some Fu Manchu tours planned in the U.S. and Europe.
Oh, wow.
Opening for them.
Yeah, the 30th anniversary of Fu Manchu. We were kicking that off this year. We were supposed to.
Yeah.
And it got pushed to March of 2021.
So everything's on hold right now because of postpone mode, which makes sense. You know, you don't want to fucking get killed and shit, but... Do you guys see what we got to get going over the internet as a way to be able to play live? Because you know, there's nothing like trading files, but man, it ain't really playing with the dude. You're playing. Actually, it's kind of safer because you can always like stop it and go back. But there's something about playing something with somebody in real time.
Oh yeah.
There's just too much latency. You know, there's too much a delay. Get this stuff together more, and maybe that'll be a way around. And then, you know, and then just work on stopping the spread and getting this thing down. But I'm wondering, what about composing, writing? Because that you could still do that shit.
Me and Hardin are neighbors. We live like a couple blocks from each other, and he built the jam room.
Great.
For us, it's soundproof and everything. And we have the opportunity now to do that, but Hardin's recovering from a neck surgery.
Ooh, neck surgery. Ooh.
Yeah, right when this COVID shit started, I fell down and broke my fucking neck.
Oh, fuck.
Like I had a...
What, like a stairs? Fucking... Like stairs?
Nah, I just fell on my back porch, like fell backwards and my head hit the side of the house and... I thought I just cut my head, but I went to the doctor and they took an x-ray and said... Strapped me to a gurney and said, man, don't move. You got to have emergency surgery right now.
Oh, shit.
You fucked your neck up.
Uh-oh, well, man.
But I just got the all good yesterday.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say all the well wishes in the world, man, that Watt can give you for that shit. What about advice, young people, getting into this racket? What would you tell them, both you guys?
25 is the cutoff. If you ain't going to make it at 25, you're not going to make it.
What about you, Hardin?
Oh, man. Stick with it. Who cares if you make it? Have fun playing. Find some guys to jam with and record if you want to or don't. Just have fun and expand your mind and your ability. And
let the freak flag fly.
Fucking A.
Yeah, okay.
That's how I feel. I say, you know, our age, now yeah. I can enjoy it more, you know. It's like playing with these guys. You know, when you get to 50, you know, it's like it's a gift, you know, if you get to still tour and play, you know.
Sure, absolutely. And then whenever you play, you get ready to play for the next time.
Right.
Big honor. It's a big honor to have you both on the show. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with me. And
hey, thanks for having me.
I love the music, man. Thank you for flowing it, man. And I can't wait to hear the next. And then, yeah, when playing comes back.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it, man.
Okay, right back. People, it's been July 18, 2020. Just Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.